Chapter 59.
As I stopped my car by the group of gypsies, I felt I was looking at something which should have been captured by a camera. The grass verge was wide on this loop of the road, and there were five of them squatting round the fire. It seemed like the mother and father and three little girls. They sat very still, regarding me blankly through the drifting smoke, while a few big snowflakes floated across the scene and settled lazily on the tangled hair of the children. Some unreal quality in the wild tableau kept me motionless in my seat, staring through the glass, forgetful of the reason for my being there. Then I wound down the window and spoke to the man.
"Are you Mr. Myatt? I believe you have a sick pony."
The man nodded. "Aye, that's right. He's over here." It was a strange accent with no trace of Yorkshire in it. He got up from the fire, a thin, dark-skinned, unshaven little figure, and came over to the car holding out something in his hand. It was a 10-shilling note, and I recognised it as a gesture of good faith. The gypsies who occasionally wandered into Derby were always regarded with a certain amount of suspicion. They came, unlike the Myatts, mainly in the summer, to camp down by the river and sell their horses, and we had been caught out once or twice before. A lot of them seemed to be called Smith, and it wasn't uncommon to go back on the second day and find that patient and owner had gone. In fact, Siegfried had shouted to me as I left the house that morning, "Get the brass if you can!" But he needn't have worried. Mr. Myatt was on the up and up. I got out of the car and followed him over the grass, past the shabby ornate caravan and the lurcher dog tied to the wheel, to where a few horses and ponies were tethered. My patient was easy to find. A handsome piebald of about 13 hands with good clean legs and a look of class about him. But he was in a sorry state. While the other animals moved around on their tethers, watching us with interest, the piebald stood as though carved from stone. Even from a distance I could tell what was wrong with him. Only acute laminitis could produce that crouching posture, and as I moved nearer I could see that all 4 feet were probably affected, because the pony had his hind feet right under his body in a desperate attempt to take his full weight on his heels. I pushed my thermometer into the rectum.
"Has he been getting any extra food, Mr. Myatt?"
"Aye. He gettin' into a bag of oats last night." The little man showed me the big, half-empty sack in the back of the caravan. It was difficult to understand him, but he managed to convey that the pony had broken loose and gorged himself on the oats. And he had given him a dose of castor oil. He called it Gaster Isle. The thermometer read 104, and the pulse was rapid and bounding. I passed my hand over the smooth, trembling hooves, feeling the abnormal heat. Then I looked at the taut face, the dilated nostrils and terrified eyes. Anybody who has had an infection under a fingernail can have an inkling of the agony a horse goes through, when the sensitive laminae of the foot are inflamed and throbbing against the unyielding wall of the hoof.
"Can you get him to move?" I asked.
The man caught hold of the head collar and pulled, but the pony refused to budge. I took the other side of the collar. "Come on. It's always better if they can get moving." We pulled together, and Mrs. Myatt slapped the pony's rump. He took a couple of stumbling steps, but it was as if the ground was red hot and he groaned as his feet came down. Within seconds he was crouching again with his weight on his heels. "It seems he just won't have it." I turned and went back to the car. I'd have to do what I could to give him relief, and the first thing was to get rid of as much as possible of that belly full of oats. I fished out the bottle of Arecoline and gave an injection into the muscle of the neck. Then I showed the little man how to tie cloths round the hooves so that he could keep soaking them in cold water. Afterwards I stood back and looked again at the pony. He was salivating freely from the Arecoline, and he had cocked his tail and evacuated his bowel. But his pain was undiminished, and it would stay like that until the tremendous inflammation subsided, if it ever did. I had seen cases like this where serum had started to ooze from the coronet. That usually meant shedding of the hooves, even death. As I turned over the gloomy thoughts, the three little girls went up to the pony. The biggest one put her arms round his neck and laid her cheeks against his shoulder while the others stroked the shivering flanks.
There were no tears, no change in the blank expressions. But it was easy to see that that pony really meant something to them.